run off with my heart into the night. Once I'd have thought you'd never let me go. Now I'm alone after all.
Hello, my name is Mark Clyde Houle. This will be the first in a series of radio tapes which are being produced by the Center for Communication and Development through a grant from the Minnesota Humanities Commission in conjunction with the National Endowment for the Humanities. Since the late 50s and the early 60s, with the formation of a group called the American Indian Movement, the American press and the electronic media have devoted a tremendous amount of time and space in newspapers and newscasts about Indian people, their concerns and actions, and the actions of the American Indian Movement itself. It seems a day would not go by without hearing something about the American Indian Movement, which became the focus of attention for many media outlets because it was news. So, unfortunately, with the American Indian Movement being labeled as a militant, subversive group, and the plain fact that a lot of people who were involved in that organization were Indians, perhaps led people to believe that all Indian people were militant. It wasn't the press's fault or the electronic media's fault, perhaps due to the lack of knowledge that Indian people have regarding the media. Maybe it was just our own fault. If Indian people had more knowledge of the electronic media, perhaps a non-Indian would begin to understand our culture and our values, our needs and our concerns. This will be the first in a series of three tapes. The first will consist of Indian people speaking about their culture, their values, needs and concerns, and how they see things, and how they apply these while living in an urban setting. The second and third tapes will consist of interviews with two Indian educators, one, Hedy Ben Banai, director of the Red Schoolhouse, who was recently named Indian Educator of the Year. The third tape will feature an interview with Vine Deloria, Standing Rock Sioux from Standing Rock, South Dakota, who is also an Indian writer. Upon hearing the word culture, it would be safe to say that each one of us has a different vision and a different meaning in our eyes and in our minds. Emily Peake is the director of the Upper Midwest American Indian Center, a long-established center which has been in the Twin Cities area for 15 years, and it offers a lot of social services for Indian people as well as information and referral for other agencies within this county. Emily is an Ojibwe. We spent some time with her, and out of that time, this was her response to the question, how do you define the term Indian culture in a contemporary sense?
Well, usually, sometimes when you say Indian culture, people think of the arts and crafts and beads, but I think it's much more than that. It's a mental attitude of how you face life. Mm-hmm. And I think if it wasn't very strong in all of us, we would have died 200 years ago. But it is very strong. And even though everybody tells Indian people that their culture is bad, I mean, they've been telling us this for a long time, it's changing now, mm-hmm. but that we were backward and primitive and all that sort of thing. I don't think Indians have ever believed that, because if you judge a people or a culture by the people it produces, you can see that our people really have been very strong and have endured all these things that have come upon them. Mm-hmm. And it's a very strong inner strength that our people do have.
I think this is something a lot of non-Indian people can't perceive or can't understand. Indian religion, that's one term, another term is Indian culture. Sometimes they think Indian culture is just powwows.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know Indian culture. To some Indian people, gets into pipe ceremonies and following a completely different kind of life. They might call it now a cult or something, but I don't think Indian culture, you don't think it's an occult or something
no.
like what they describe, anything that is not Christian.
No. No. No, I think it was very real, and our patient people have a lot of patience and strength. I'm glad they do, because we needed it all mm-hmm. these years. And it's really, I think, a very beautiful thing, but hard to translate into everyday terms.
Mm-hmm.
And hard to... what I think we've got to do is somehow translate it so that Indian people can give this to white people, because they really need it. In fact, I think the country needs it, or we're going to maybe be in trouble. Such
mm-hmm.
as an attitude toward living things, you know, respect for life, attitude toward living things.
The lady you hear in the background is Barbara Ballinger. She works with the Urban Coalition of Minneapolis. She's a Sioux, she's a Chippewa. She participated in some of these interviews. Some music by Exit. Spiritual feelings and cultural feelings are the same to some of us. George Mitchell, who is an educational specialist in the area of Minneapolis-St. Paul and who works with the Minneapolis Regional Native American Center, talked with us.
And I'm not saying that every person should be with the Indian religion. I think that's their own personal thing with them. And that's my own personal thing. But I'm hurt, you know, and I understand why many Indian people give a negative connotation even to their own religion, because they've been whitewashed so damn long, it takes a long time for them to realize what their religion really is. And our religion has been pushed in the background so much, and it's been suppressed by the system, that many Indian people don't know where it's at and can't find it, or just searching and searching. I think that's a good thing about, a great thing about Indian people becoming aware of what they really are and what everything's really about, beginning to dig around and look around and talk to what I call our educational institutions. That's the elders
mm-hmm.
who I was brought up with, and I'm really glad that I was brought up with them.
People think that through the programs such as the BIA relocation program, Indian culture and the right to practice Indian culture has been suppressed and lost. Vine Delorier is a Standing Rock Sioux and a well-known writer who has written a number of books about Indians. Some of those include We Talk, You Listen, Custer Died for Your Sins, and God is Red, along with numerous other articles which have been published in nationally known Indian newspapers. We spent some time together in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and in a television interview which we did, I talked with him, and we asked him the following question.
Do you think that American Indians are losing their culture?
No, I think the culture is transforming in fundamental ways. You still have patterns of behavior. That you can look back in old documents 150 years ago and you find a certain pattern of behavior. You go to an Indian meeting today, you find the same pattern of behavior. But all this technology's come along too. So you find Indians have kind of transformed that behavior and they're now using different things to do it. You get a reservation, almost everybody has an unlisted telephone number. So what do? You have to go into the different families on the reservation. If you get a telephone number from one of them, you can call a great many people there. Now that's your old family band structure still there. But what they've done is taken an unlisted telephone number and made that the hookup, see, instead of the camp circle. So I think it requires a lot of insight, and that's been my complaint for 15 years about social scientists. They don't look at Indians the way they are. They still got the reservations, and how did the horse affect you? Well, we're not talking about horses today. We're talking about Hondas and pickups and campers. And once you can get the non-Indian world to see that transition, the Indian kids at Pine Ridge treat Hondas the way they used to treat ponies 100 years ago. I mean, they're going all over those gullies and just having themselves a time. And you got to point out to the Indians, you haven't lost your culture. What you've had are behavior patterns you've allowed to transfer over. You're doing the same thing Indians are doing, but you're doing it faster, and you're doing it in far different ways.
Alternative education is slowly gaining recognition nationally, even though there are different schools of thought concerning what approach should be taken to alternative education. And there are two such schools in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, both of who are run by Indians, and the student population is all Indian. Alternative education, as we see it, is supportive education, but unfortunately both schools are thought to have the support and backing of the American Indian movement, so therefore a lot of people haven't taken the time to examine the schools. They already have a preconceived notion. Jim O'Brien is director of Heart of the Earth Survival School, an alternative school in Minneapolis.
And find a way to bring your sunken love back to the surface.
Well, let me start by saying that each and every school day does start with our drum. And we work with that for 15 minutes. We're all together. A drum is part of our religion. Most of us don't go to church 1 hour a week. Mm-hmm. We teach our students that the Indian religion, the Indian way of life, is to be practiced all the time. As far as being in church goes, if you practice the Indian way of life, you're in church always. And we try to get the spirituality of our kids out. And once they realize the significance and the importance of the drum, they tend to settle down and start picking up on their responsibilities. And their responsibilities in school lie in going to class and learning, not just going to class so you don't get in trouble.
In some studies that were recently done in this area, the level of unemployment for Indian people is unusually high. The rate of Indian suicide is on the uprise, and most of the community lives in poverty conditions. The environment's bad, and there's a very large amount of Indian people who haven't received any formal education. Don Gurnall is an Indian advocate with the Hennepin County Welfare Department. His job is to act as an advocate for Indian people in the system and paperwork that's involved when applying for welfare. Barbara, myself, and Kathy spent some time with Don. This was one of his responses to a question about cross-cultural differences and what they mean and how he sees them.
There's certainly a lot of cultural and social things. You know, somebody comes down off the reservation to live in the cities, man. You get lost here pretty easy. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things involved in that.
Well, sure, that's quite typically the case.
Sure, somebody comes down, anybody that comes down from the reservation expects to, you know, to move in or get some help from your relatives. And certainly the relatives expect that too. And here again, you know, that's kind of a cross-cultural clash because in a lot of instances, the family is financially extended or socially extended far enough that, you know, they can't afford the burden either. And at the same time, you know, you can't deny those people, sure. So what do you do?
And that it would be theirs.
forever. The New World. This is what the white man called our land. But it was not new at all. The red man. Inhabitants of America for centuries.
And what about other problems Indian people face in the cities? A lot of people, particularly Indian people around the cities, share the same feelings as George Mitchell, the upper Minneapolis Regional Native American Center.
I think we thought of that back in the late 60s too, and our only conclusion is not one issue is a major priority. I feel that all issues regarding Indian people are priorities, be it housing, employment, job training, education, or even dealing with people in any social service. They are top priorities.
Issues which concern a lot of Indians in the city and perhaps around the nation. But as you have heard, and we have heard, a lot of people spoke about Indian education as a form of survival for all people. John Pupart, who is the director of the Anishinaabe Longhouse, a halfway house for Indian men who have been incarcerated or involved in the correctional system, is an Indian. John also was running for a seat on the Minneapolis School Board. And if we can go back for just a minute to the alternative education, John has two children. One attends public school, the other an alternative school. And John says he can see the difference.
Well, first of all, I state very clearly that I support alternative education for Indian students who choose to go that way. It gets down to a matter of, I think, personal choice, or at least family choice. My daughter, I've taken out of the public schools and placed in an alternative school for Indian children. As a matter of fact, I've placed her in the Red Schoolhouse. But yet, my boy remains in the public school system. Primarily, he can deal with it. He understands it, you know. He's just having fun. And maybe in a couple of years, he's younger, yeah, he's younger than the girl, so maybe in a couple of years he will arrive at that conflict as she has. And I've noticed a tremendous change in her, just from a personal, you know, statement here. It has simply turned her world around in how she perceives herself and how she perceives her world and how she fits in that. It's now an assertion. She asserts herself very well and has control over her behavior, over her ideas, and over her learning potentials and abilities. I think it's like a dream that came true, you know. I hope that would happen in the schools, but it didn't. Anyway, the alternative school situation is one of varying degrees. I think wherever you go in the city of Minneapolis, you would get a different kind of description of alternative education. Our efforts within the parameters of District 1 here have been that alternative education is okay as long as it still follows the traditional kinds of steps that education has for the last 100 years. And we know that Columbus didn't discover America, you know. I think that's common to us. We know that George wasn't the father of our country. And it's not all cowboys and Indians. So, you know, it's time that we get off on that thing and cop out and say, hey, country, people, we've lied. We have put forth a whitewash to you, and now the whitewash has turned into brainwash, and so we're going to stop it now, and we're going to really get serious about talking about Chief Holin today maybe give some accurate representation of Chief Joseph, of Crazy Horse and Black Hawk and those, I think, people of wisdom, great philosophers and prophets, you know, start including them in the English lit classes where we talk about Shakespeare and Bacon and those kind of people, you know. So, you know, let's integrate thoroughly the education, not simply the bodies, but the total scope of education. But you see, that's what's happening.
You feel that our educators weren't all white people. There was a lot of Indians with a lot of wisdom behind them.
Definitely. And I think they have to get into the curriculum. And I think that's what I say, efforts are being made to alter the curriculum, to gear it to the needs of Indian people. But the point that I'm making here is that alternative education, as it's happening within the bureaucracy of the school district, is not really, in fact, alternative education. It's simply a moving around of desks, but it's the same old bullshit that's happened for many, many years. And if we allow that to happen and say, hey, right on, you're doing a beautiful job, then that kind of stuff will be continued to be cranked out to our children, and it won't serve us any positive at all.
You took his land and you ate his corn, and on his grave your land was born. You took his pride and you fed him dirt. You wished him winter without a shirt. And you called this red man savage. And after you crushed him, you helped him up to let him drink from an empty cup. You gave him the navy without the fleet and made him lick your hands and kiss your feet. And you named this mad dog savage. Well, I found a book the other day, so I looked up red and white to see what it say. One was a savage, the other unlearned. Like a look in the mirror, the tables were turned. For history has named you savage.
During the past half hour, we've presented thoughts and opinions from Indian people from around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, keeping in mind that these people have moved around a lot during their lifetime around the nation. All of them have different philosophies and views concerning the issues that involve Indian people and their own ways and voices for communicating their thoughts. Seems that a major concern to Indian people is for everyone else who lives in the society is survival. When the VFW or any organization goes out and marches in the streets, people understand what they're all about and why they're doing it. It's the American way. There's a understanding. But unfortunately for Indian people, there is no such understanding. If I could just take a minute of your time to ask you to think of the term Indian, think of the year 1800 and what an Indian would look like then. Now think of an Indian in 1977. Is there any difference in your mind? For some of you, perhaps not. There's an image in your mind that's hard to erase. It's hard to forget ugly things when you read and hear about ugly things every day. For quite some time, there's been a misrepresentation in the educational system of what Indians are all about. And then in the late 50s and early 60s, the media, without thinking, started to present their images of Indians in their newscasts and print. We can't blame the media totally. It's a job they had to do. In the following two tapes, we'll discuss the media and the images that it's created.
Great white father, you would know my name.
The views and the opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent those of the Minnesota Humanities Commission or the National Endowment for the Humanities.
Captain Fetterman, and we never left a trace into our sacred homeland. Your blue coat soldiers came, but we just taught you a heap big lesson in the battle of 100 slain. And someday, great white father, you will know my name.